We left off last time on the bottom, or towards the middle of Samach Dalet Amud Beis. So, the Gemara had just presented a claim. The Gemara was discussing whether or not a goy can be mevatel avodah zarah if he's not an oved avodah zarah himself. That was the question. That's clear. That's the minimalist way to read the brisa. But the original question of the Gemara is whether ger toshav, who is not oved avodah, or someone who's not oved avodah zarah, is capable of being mevatel since he's not a worshipper. So the Gemara had, we just quoted the brisa that spoke about an oved kochav mevatel shalov v'shal chavero. And the conclusion of the Gemara is that the Braisa could be read, doesn't have to be read, that an Oved Avodah Zarah who worships Pa'or can be Mevatel Amarkulis. An Oved Avodah Zarah who worships Amarkulis can Mevatel Pa'or. And certainly someone who Oved Pa'or can be Mevatel another Goy's Pa'or. But someone who's not Oved Avodah Zarah at all, is he capable of being Mevatel? So the Gemara says the following, Meisvei, it's about almost halfway down the page. If you look at Tosos, the fourth Tosos, Diblam Aschal Acherim, if you go into the Gemara there, one line down, the last word. Meisvei, Ezehu Ger Toshav, what is the definition of a Ger Toshav? So most of us work with the conclusion of this, not of this Gemara, but the generally accepted principle that a Ger Toshav is one who has accepted the Shefa Mitzvah. And apparently, Chazal entertained actually a broader range of possibilities of what constitutes a ger toshav in surprising directions. I suppose it's worth noting that this should not be a total surprise. I like to joke and say that if it weren't for the mitzvah of bris milah, the world would be Jewish and not Christian. Judaism was very attractive to a lot of pagans in the Greco-Roman period, particularly in Palestine, in Eretz Yisrael. Probably, and Josephus talks about a lot of these, what he called phobomenai, a couple of terms, use these God-fearers, who seem to have been, I'll call, quasi-Jewish. And from my understanding is that one of the biggest obstacles to actually being Jewish was the bris milah. Because if you think about, for us, what are the major aspects of being from? So number one, Shabbos and Kashrus. So Shabbos was a tremendous gift in a world in which the pagans worked 7 days a week unless you had a festival. So Shabbos was a great thing. And in terms of Machalos Asuros, so Machalos Asuros are much more difficult today than they were once upon a time because most of us do not manufacture most of our food. We rely upon someone else. But if you really only were buying raw ingredients, keeping kosher is not hard at all. Making food is hard, much harder, but not keeping kosher. So if you think about it, in that world, really, Shabbos was rather attractive. Kashrus was not an impediment. So probably the biggest obstacle was actually bris milah. You know, when you can think of Mel Brooks and Robin Hood and things like that. And you can imagine why bris milah is not such an appealing feature.
And women didn't have any ability to convert on their own.
I'm guessing, and I don't know. You know, my impression, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I have to go back and look in Josephus. He's describing men. So the fact that you could have people would not be surprising who would be adopting various pieces of Judaism, not just those that we would think theoretically relevant. Obviously, from our conceptual standpoint, there really should be only three categories of person. There's a person who keeps none of the mitzvahs, there's a person who keeps Sheva mitzvahs, and there's a person who keeps Taryag mitzvahs. Right? You would not think that less than seven mitzvahs is meaningful. You would think that less than seven equals zero. You would think that there's nothing meaningful between 7 and 613. It's one or the other. So now the Gemara presents, surprisingly, three opinions. Meisavei, Ezehu ger toshav, kol shekibal ala b'fnei shlosha chaveirim shelo lavar avodas kochavim, divrei Rabbi Meir. The first opinion, Rabbi Meir's opinion, is that a ger toshav is defined as someone who accepted in front of three people just one of the Sheva mitzvos, namely, avodah zarah. Right, so this avodah zarah is the one of the Sheva mitzvahs that really speaks to what I'll call a person's religion. So the ger toshav, according to Rabbi Meir, who accepted upon himself in front of three, and this is probably, this is a technicality, and whether it's required in all circumstances for Ger Toshav is an interesting question. There seems to be a debate between the Rambam and the Ravid and Hilchos Avodah Zarah. If you read the Rambam quite literally, you know, in the most strict sense, it would appear that Bisman Shayad Yisrael Takifa, in Eretz Yisrael, if you had true Jewish sovereignty, where we could do whatever we wanted, you wouldn't allow a single Nachri to pass through Eretz Yisrael, even one who kept the Sheva Mitzvos, because there is no din of Ger Toshav Bisman Hazeh, technically, because there's no Yovel. And if there's no Yovel, the din is there's no Ger Toshav. So obviously, we have people, we have Noahites, we could describe, who would effectively qualify as Ger Toshav if there were formality. So the Rambam sounds like, the Rambam, I think it's a parakeet of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, says that Bisman Yad Yisrael Takifa, so Lo Yavru Ba'ar Tzecha, we're not allowed to allow any non-Ger Toshav to pass through Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam, in that very same context, makes clear what a Ger Toshav is. And the Ravid seems to disagree with the Rambam and assumes that the formality of the requirement would not be necessary. But you still, the Ravid wouldn't disagree that Bisman Shel Yad Yisrael Takifa, so if someone were not a Ger Toshav, you wouldn't allow him to pass through Eretz Yisrael. Today is not Bisman Shel Yad Yisrael Takifa, and therefore it's really irrelevant. Yes, there's Jewish sovereignty, but we can't do anything we want. Yes.
Muslims qualify?
As Ger Toshav? So you're asking, I assume the question you're asking is the Avodah Zarah question. What's that?
In general.
Well, I mean, the only other question you'd ask was Lo Sirtach. But which Rav Amital, apparently, after one pigua at one point, had made some anguished comment about raising that question. I don't think I suspect in a rhetorical rather than in a halachic fashion. But yes, I think we assume that that Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah. There's a tshuva, a funny tshuva, the Radvaz, I think, who talks about something, and then there's a tshuva, the Tzitz Eliezer, but it seems to be based upon a mistaken impression as to I think the Radvaz is the one who says they're not of the Zohar, which is correct, and the Tzitz Eliezer has some funny source that he quotes, which sounded like he was dealing with syncretistic worship, but I think we assume, I think generally accepted opinion is that Muslims are not Odevo Dezara, so generally, on the whole, they observe they accept the Sheva Mitzvos, and then the only question is this nature of the formality, and it's relevant, by the way, in terms of Mechiras Karka. Right? The question of whether Lo Sechonim applies might also be dependent upon, well, they're not formally Gerei Toshav, is the prohibition of Lo Sechonim therefore applicable, or do you say no under those circumstances?
What's the connection between Ger Toshav and Yovel? Why are they?
I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember why. I think it's a Gemara in Bechoros. I think it should be in the Rambam there. I think I somehow thought it was the Gemara in Bechoros, which talks about someone wants to be a Ger and accept upon every mitzvah except for this one. We don't accept them, both the Geri Toshav and Geri Tzedek. So I thought it's in that Gemara, but I have to. If you send me an email, I'll try to dig out why. What's the connection between Yovel and Ger Toshav? So, anyway, Rabbi Meir's opinion is that it's sufficient to be a Ger Toshav if he's Mekabel formally, not to be Oved Avodah Zarah. Which interestingly enough, what about the other six mitzvahs? So, I don't think we necessarily assume that he violates routinely the other six mitzvahs, he doesn't require formal Kabbalah. Tosus here does have a question. The maskana of the Gemara is going to be that the reason, the meaning in designating someone formally as a Ger Toshav is it's a mitzvah l'hachayosa. And maybe it's not a chiyuv. Maybe the Gemara wouldn't say you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos to save the person's life. But there's definitely a mitzvah l'hachayosa, which means it's a mitzvah tzedaka, which means referring to a famous Mishnah in Gittin, when the Mishnah says, Mefarnesim aniye akum im aniye Yisrael mitnei darkei shalom, that you provide support to aniyim who are ovdei avodah zarah, or the Mishnah says, I think akum, I don't know what the exact language of the Mishnah is, along with aniye Yisrael because of darkei shalom, which implies that there's no mitzvah doraisa, and yet that would appear to be contradicted by a passage in Mechilta cited by Rashi that im kesef talveh es ami. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia and the Chulta say, Ami v'acher Ami kodem. If you're talking about a Jew and you're talking about a Nachri, so the Jew receives precedence. But as the Meiri points out, if you're saying the Jew receives precedence, it implies that in our Torah there is a mitzvah for the Nachri. It's just that a Jew gets precedence in terms of if you have a triage, you have a limited resources. So the simple answer to this contradiction, in other words, do you support any Akum because of Dark Yeshalom? Because really it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, the answer is it probably depends on whether a Ger Toshav or not. A Ger Toshav, there's a mitzvah l'achayoso, and obviously the mitzvah tzedakah applies, that's certainly in that. Marshall? And if he's not a Ger Toshav, again, forgetting how you want to get, find what makes a Ger Toshav as Mount Hazeh, then it's only because of Darkei Shalom. Marshall?
Rabbi, Eliezer Melamed says that at the time that Yovel is not being followed, as in the modern era, there's no halachic ability to accept a Ger Toshav at a
Beit Din. Right, no, I know, but my question...
You can make Ger Toshav.
No, no, but the question is why. The question is why is it?
Oh, I thought you said,
No, no, I know that. And as the Gemara says, that you're not Makab and Gertoshev is Banche and Ayovel Noheg, but I don't remember what's the limud. That was the question.
So,
but the only question is, could you be Michal Shabbos?
I'm saying, so well, we are Michal Shabbos.
We are. So either because Darkei Shalom or because the Meiri. So either way, it's going to apply. So certainly, it applies to an Oved Adar Zarah. It certainly applies to a Gertoshev. For sure.
Can we say a Shachianu? Because we think this is the first time in 10 years you've ever said that you don't actually remember something.
I'm sure that is not true. I'm sure that that is not true.
Kibbes.
Okay.
Now you're not remembering that?
Okay, that's right. There you go. So anyway, Tosos. Tosos asks, you'll need sushi at this kiddush. Okay. So Tosos actually raises the question, since the maskana of the Gemara is going to be that when the Tanaim are probing what's the definition of Ger Toshav, it's to know where there's a mitzvah l'hachayoso. So the question is, but if in fact this Ben Noach doesn't keep the other Sheva mitzvos, so immediately he's mechuyav misa. And Tosa says, even Bli Edim Hasra, you don't need the formal requirements. So Tosa's answer is that as long as Beis Din is not actually done somebody, without a formal Psak Gemar Din, so then the guy is not Mechuyav Misa, and therefore it reverts to the general category, a guy would be Lo Moridim V'lo Malim, but apparently... he says that once Beis Din has not declared upon this person that he's Chai Misa, then he's not liable for any of the other six mitzvahs that he might have done, and therefore there's a mitzvah l'hachayoso. Tosus points out the general din, which we learned about earlier in the Masechta, about a guy, a Yisrael, who's an Api Koreh, so Moridin V'lomalin, if you can, you know, get him into the pit and pull the ladder away, that's a mitzvah to do so. But by an Oved with a Zara guy, Lo Moridin V'lomalin. So Tosus said, why Lo Moridin? If he's Chai of Misa, because he's violated some of the Sheva mitzvahs, so you see that unless there's a formal psak din, so then he's not actually chayiv. This, strangely enough, a very odd bekias from the past. I think it's a Bach. I've never found that Rosh Echter quoted this, that who argued that, wanted to say that it should be usher to eat all meat bisman hazeh, because it was based upon many assumptions, some of which are probably, I don't know, they might have been true in the Bach, so I don't know. He claimed that ro behemos were near bu'u, al yidei gaim. He claimed most behemoths would have been engaged in a bestial act, and he wanted to claim that Ben Noach is Nerag below Eden Vahasra, and wanted to say that even without a Gemar Din. And therefore, since if the Adam is really chayiv, if the Ben Noach is really chayiv, whether we're killing him or not, the behemoth is really chayiv mis as well, and it's also even if you shecht it and so on. There are a lot of problems with that, but just our Tosis for starters raises the first issue, which is without a psak din, so there's no din on the Nachri, and there's no din on the behemoth either. But okay. So fine. So this is the first day. Vermeer's opinion is that to be a Ger Toshav, he has to be Mekabel b'fnei Shlosha, that he's not going to worship Avodah Zarah. The second opinion in the Gemara, Rachachamim Omer, Kol Shekibel Alav Sheva Mitzvos, Shekiblu Alehem B'nei Noach. As long as the Ger Toshav is formally Mekabel, the Sheva Mitzvos, which, it's funny, the Gemara's formulation, Shekiblu Alehem B'nei Noach, is a little bit odd, because I think if you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara says that Sheva Mitzvos Nitzavu B'nei Noach. It's not that the Goyim were Mekabel upon themselves, they were given the Tzivoy by God. The same way we were given 613 mitzvahs. I guess we chose to be Mekabel, but I thought we only were Mekabel 606 of them. The other seven were already binding upon us, and the Makor for the most of the Sheva Mitzvos is Vayitzav Hashem Elokim Al Adam Lemor Vayitzav Tzivu. But here the Gemara describes this Kiblu Alayim. So as long as he's Mekabel formally in front of the Beis Din upon himself that which the Sheva Mitzvos which the Bnei Noach Mekabel Aleim, that makes him a Ger Toshav. And finally, Acherim Omrim, Ein Lo Bar L'Chlal Ger Toshav. So firstly, who is Acherim? There's a very interesting story that's told at the end, the last daf in the Gemara in Horios. According to that story, and Marshall, you would say I just disqualified myself from being the Nasi because I didn't remember something. So in order to be the Nasi, you had to know all the Shas. That's the way the Bavli presents it there. And so Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassan was, I think, the Av Beis Din, and Rabbi Meir was, I don't know what his, if he had a formal position, they were upset at Rabbi Moshim Gamaliel, that's Rabbi's father, Rabbi Gamaliel Hasheni's son, who was the Nasi, and so they decided, they plotted against him to embarrass him, to show that he didn't know all the Shas. So they would decide they were going to ask him questions in Uksin, right? You know, that little Masechta buried at the end of Taras. So one of the Talmidim got wind of the plot, so he was one of Rabbi Moshim Gamaliel's Mishamshim. So he didn't want to tell him, but instead he started chazering Uksin in his presence that night. And Rabbi Moshim Gamaliel said, it's really weird, what's he learning Uksin for? But he paid attention. And the next day he came to Rabbi Menashe, and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassim said, let's learn some Uksin. And they started asking Rabbi Moshim Gamaliel questions, and he knew the answers, but then he realized what had happened. And as punishment, they threw them out of the Beis Medrash. But then the problem was, they were the two biggest Talmidei Chachamim, so they kept, when they had questions, they couldn't figure out the answers to, they had to send the questions outside. So eventually they said, Torah b'chutz v'anu mi'bifnim, so they let them back into the Beis Medrash, but the punishment was that in the future, Rabbi Meir's Shmuos would no longer be quoted in his name, they would be quoted as Acherim, and Rabbi Nassim was recorded as a Yesh Omrim. So Tosis points out here, and he's a few places in Shas, you have it by both Yesh Omrim and Acherim, that it's not actually Rabbi Nassan or Rabbi in those cases, because we saw Dibra Meir, Vachacham Omrim, and then Acherim Omrim. So Tosis says this Acherim is not Rabbi Meir. Okay, fine. I've always wondered, but I don't know if anybody's drawn the connection, whether there's any connection between the fact that Rabbi Meir's Rebbe was Elisha ben Avuya, who's called Acher. I don't know if this, you know, if there's any, if that connection has any meaning. Okay. So then, the last opinion, Acherim Omrim, Ilu Bolo Bolo L'Chal Ger Toshav. Nah! One mitzvah, seven mitzvahs, doesn't get you into the club of Ger Toshav. Ela Ezu Ger Toshav, Ze Ger Ochal Nevelos, Shakiba Lov L'Kaim Kol Mitzvahs Hamuras B'Torah, Chutz Me Iser Nevelos. Now, okay. So that's an excellent comment, Josh, and I'll tell you why it's not a weird one. It's a perfectly logical one. I can't tell you what the inherent logic of why Nevel over every other mitzvah, but I can tell you how Acherim got their position, which is, the Torah states in Parshas Re'eh, Lo sochlu chol nevela, la ger asher bisharecha titanena va'achala, o machor lenachri kiam kadosh atal Hashem elkecha lo svashel gidi b'chalei bima. So the fact that the Torah says that if you have a nevela, you're not allowed to eat it, but you can either give it to the ger asher bisharecha, which presumably is not a ger tzedek, he has all mitzvahs like you do, so it must be a ger toshav, or sell it to a nachri, so obviously a ger is allowed to eat nevelos. So why you should pick only nevelos and why the Torah should pick nevelos? Good question. But the way Acherim arrived at his position was because it's clear the Torah assumes that a ger is allowed to eat a nevelos, and he says for some reason, say all the 612 mitzvahs. Those are the three opinions. So now, what is the din of a ger toshav? And then what's the relevance of someone being a ger toshav? So the Gemara says, Miyachadin etzlo yayin, you can leave him alone with your wine, but be'ein mafkidin etzlo yayin, you cannot entrust it to him on a long-term basis. We'll talk about this. I'm going to come back to this very important issue, a kohalacha lemaisa. Vafilu be'ir sheruba Yisrael, and even in a city where it's a majority of Jews, you're not allowed to be mafkid yayin etzlo long-term. You can't entrust them with your wine. Avomiyachdin etzlo yayin, but you can do yichud, you can leave him for a shorter time, and a shorter time means you tell him, I'm going to the store, I'm not going to be back for 2 hours. It's plenty of time if he wanted to open the barrel, do whatever he wanted with the wine, and seal the barrel up, where you normally could not leave it with an Oved Avodah Zarah for that long. Here, that's not a problem. Yichud is not a problem, but long term, it's an issue. And so, Yichud is mutter for, with him in the wine, afilu b'ir sheru over the kochavim. Then the Braisa says, Shamno kiyeno, his shemen has the same din as wine. So the Gemara interrupts this immediately, off topic, and saying, Shamno kiyeno, salka daitach shemen mikahave kiyayin esach. Shemen can't be asur bahana like yayin esach. Can it, you, people, they didn't libate oil. Oil was not, yes. Hold on. So hold on. Wait 1 second. So the Gemara then turns around and modifies the Braisa to say, Ela yeno kishamno. Shemen shel ger toshav would be asur. Before Rabbi Yehuda Ubeistino permitted shemen shel akum, why is shemen of a ger toshav asur? Because the reason for the gzeir of shemen was chasnus. It was intermarriage, and that applies equally by a ger toshav. And the reason for the yayin, by the way, would be the same reason. Right? You would say the yayin of a ger toshav is not asur bahana, but it's kishamno. It's asur ba'achila or b'shtia because of the gzeir of chasnus. And ulashar kol davar, harehu ka'ove kochavim. With regards to everything else, he is treated like a goy. This is the crucial line that the Gemara is quoting this for, which the Gemara will comment on in a moment, but we have to just finish the Breisha. The Breisha, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yenam Yenesech. Rabbi Shimon says, one version of Rabbi Shimon is that the Yayin of a Ger Toshav is Mamash Yayin Esech, it's Asabana. The Amri La, there are those who say, Mutar B'Shasiyah. No, as he disagrees with the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama said that the Yayin of a Ger Toshav is Asur B'Shtiyah Mutar Bana. And Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He either says it's Asur Bana, or he says it's Mutar B'Shasiyah, which, by the way, makes sense generally for Rabbi Shimon's position that we saw at the last Mishnah of the fourth Perek, which we began this Zman, when we resume. Rabbi Shimon is the one who's consistent. The wine is either Asur Lagamre, or it's Mutar Lagamre, and what the Amoraim praised him, that he was Mishavim Midosav. He made things consistent. So here Rabbi Shimon is consistent as well, but we're not sure whether he was consistently Machmir, or consistently Mako. But either way, he doesn't have the split about the wine. And the Brisa. Yeah.
Why does the Gemara say Rabban Shimon?
Oh, because it's probably Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel. If it's the correct Nusach. Yeah.
So, why do we single out Shemen in this instance? I mean, it could be Shechar, it could be any number of things
No, because Shechar is not a Xer from the Tanoim. We learned about Shechar, but the Gemara in the second parak asks out of the blue, Shechar Shalakim, why is it Usser? And nowhere did the Mishnah, nowhere in Tanakh literature does it say it's Usser. So the Rishonim say that, there was some type of Xera, but it's not recorded in Tanakh literature. Gvinas Akum and Chalev Akum are concerns of Tarovis, not of Chastos.
Right.
So the only one that you could have singled out probably was Pas Akum, would have been the only one. So it was Pas or Shemen. Those were the choices. So they picked Shemen. Why one over the other, I don't know. Maybe because they're both liquids.
Maybe they're both, they're very important to the existence of the daily life.
So is Pas. Right. It's for that very reason why actually they will make Elon Pas Palter, because it was so necessary that it made life so hard. Okay. So the Gemara now says, Kotoni Miha, which is the language the Gemara uses when it quoted a long Brisa, which could be very distracting, and you want to know why did it quote the Brisa, or where was the proof from the Brisa from? So Kotoni Miha, Ulishar kol dvarav harehu ka'akum. That with regards to all other things, a Ger Toshav outside of his miyachdin etzlo yayin, and that his yayin is only asur b'shasiyah, but it's not asur b'hana according to the Tanakhama. U'l'shar kol dvarav, he is like a goy, l'may hilchasa. Presumably, what does it mean he's like a goy? Lav d'mevata l'avodas kochavim kovei kochavim. Wouldn't that be that he has the capacity, since he's not Jewish, he has the capacity, even though he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, to be mevata l'avodah Zarah? So the Gemara says, no. Amar av Nachman bar Yitzchak lo. Litein rishus u'levata rishus. So this is a din in Erevin. So just a very quick background to Erevin. Today we talk about the Erev being up and down. Being up, or the Erev not being up, being down. So that is, unfortunately, an inaccurate description of what an Erev is. If you were going to talk about the Erev being intact or not intact, you would talk about whether it had been eaten or it was still intact. Because there are two parts to an Erev. The part that we call the Erev, but is actually not the Erev, are the Mechitzos. In order to make any type of an Erev, and I'll explain why we need it, it already has to be not a Rishus HaRabim, the Oraisa minimally. You need walls around the city, maybe you're allowed to do what we do, using lechis to have sort of imaginary walls. The area, of course, all we've shown them cannot have started out as Rishus HaRabim, and has to be reduced already to Rishus HaYachid. Now, that's not the Erev, those are the Mechitzos. Even if you have four solid walls around the city with, barely an opening, you still require an Erev. An Erev is something totally different. The reason why an Erev was required, the Gemara in the second parak, Erevin says it was a takana of Shlomo HaMelech, was the following. Normally you're allowed to carry as much as you would like in a Rosh Hashayachid, and you can carry from one Rosh Hashayachid into another Rosh Hashayachid. However, the Chachamim were afraid that if you have two different Rosh Hashayachids, two different sets owners in these Rishuyos, if you allow a person to carry from one to the other, a person will say to himself, "Mali mir shusayachad rishusayachad, mali mir shusayachad rishusarabin." And therefore, the Chachamim made an issur d'rabbanan to carry from, let's say you live in an apartment building in on the Upper East Side. So, in the absence of any type of eruv, so to carry from your apartment to your neighbor's apartment is a problem because it's from one rishusayachad to a different rishusayachad. Probably doesn't matter. since you have all right, pretty much all rights of Dira, under certain dormitories, we usually assume, does not require an Eruv, but your rights in a dormitory, let's say in NYU at least, are very, very limited. Whereas the furniture's there, you can't move the furniture out. It's called, the Balabais has Tfisas Yad there. I'm not sure, it almost certainly doesn't apply by condos and probably not by regular rentals either.
But by co-ops, you own all the common space together.
Well, that's part of the problem, actually. That creates the problem. So not only can you not carry from one apartment to the other, but since the common space is jointly owned or used, the rights to use it are joint, that's a different Rosh HaSarechet. The hall in front of my apartment is different than my apartment. The purpose of an Eruv is to make us all one big happy family. We're all basically living in the same house, which is what you do is you have food, which is owned jointly. We use a box of matzah, which is advantageous because it doesn't spoil or go bad. They use bread, and it had a limited lifespan before it was inedible. So you have common food, and it is placed in one person's house, one person's apartment, and it is this. If everybody who participated in that is actually living there. Now, when you make an Eruv in a chatzer, so the way they typically lived in the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara is you had many houses that opened into a chatzer, and the chatzer had a door that opened either into the Rosh HaRabim or into an alleyway that led to the Rosh HaRabim. So you had five houses, let's say. I think a minimum you need is three. I think it might be, I guess probably two works. Three chatzers and two batim is a city. So you have at least two people who share a courtyard. But if you can have multiple people there, and by making everybody contributes to this Eruv, and they put it in a house, you can't put it in the chatzer, it's got to be in one of the batim. So now it's as if everybody lives in that house, and it's all one reshus, jointly owned, or joint rights of usage for everybody. If one person in that chatzer does not participate in the Eruv, refuses to do so, or just didn't by accident, so then your Eruv is no good, because that person has rights in the courtyard. So not only can you not carry from your house to their house, you can't even cast from your house into the courtyard. Because even if everybody else made the Eruv, still that one person has a reshus in the chatzer, and he is not living in this one house because he didn't contribute to the Eruv. Now normally the way we do the Eruv is we are mizakeh. We don't have to... It is clear, sometimes they used to go around, somebody would go around collecting, a little small amount of food from each family from the Eruv, but you can also just buy the food yourself and be mizakeh. You have use a third party, and that third party is kona for everybody else. That's the basic concept of Eruv. When they made the problem, of course, making Eruv in today, we engage in many, many loopholes. I guess we're only getting around the Nisid Rabbanon. Presumably, the Goyim in our towns do not participate in the Eruv. In fact, not only do they not, because many of them are really lovely people, probably most of them, and they'd be happy to participate in our Eruv if it would help us carry on Shabbos, but they can't participate in the Eruv. I don't think they can, actually. And they weren't even considered that possibility. However, the problem is the Goy is not part of the Eruv, so in order to get the Goy, in order for him not to be Me'akah of an Eruv, you have to be Socher Rishus from him. You have to get him to, you may give him two pennies, and he's masked to his reshus, and thereby you have rights in the entire area. Today it's usually done through like a town council or something like that. I don't know when they've had fights over Erevin, like we had in the Tenafly Eruv. So the objection was raised to the Lechis on the telephone poles, which only the Jewish council members in Tenafly objected to. But the interesting thing is, I wonder how many people realized about Schiris Rishus, because they were probably much more offended by Schiris Rishus than just putting up Lechis on the telephone pole. Legal fictions are probably lost upon most people if you don't have legal training. So the idea that we are Socha Rishus, and now we have rights in the entire town and everybody's backyard, that probably would not go over so well with people who are not appreciative of legal fictions. Okay. So now, how was this relevant here? Because the Gemara says that a Ger Toshav, the Brice is saying, a Ger Toshav is like a Goy. A Jew, if a Jew forgets to contribute to the Eruv on Shabbos, he can be mevatel his reshus in the chatzer. He can say, I am misalik mevatel from the chatzer. He's not allowed to carry then from his house into the chatzer. But one Jew who forgot to give to the Eruv, wasn't a participant, he can be mevatel reshus to all the other people, all the other Jews in the chatzer, and they can carry from house to house and from house to chatzer and chatzer to house. He is cut out of that. A Jew can be mevatel reshus. However, someone who is not Shomer Shabbos, someone who's a Mechal Shabbos for Hesse, even if they're Jewish, cannot, as we're about to read, and certainly a guy. So, the Gemara's answer to the proof or to the challenge of the Braisa that says that a ger toshav is like a goy l'chol davar except for one or two things that we mentioned. It's not talking about being mevatel avodah zarah. It's talking about being a liskor rishus ulevatel rishus. He can't be mevatel rishus. In order to make the eruv, you have to be socher rishus from him. That has to be done from Erev Shabbos. Bittul can be done on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Kidatanya, Uchidatanya, Yisrael, five lines from the bottom, Yisrael Mumar, Mishamer Shabbato Bashuk. If you have a Jew who is a Mumar, he's Mechal Shabbos, but in public he's not Mechal Shabbos, so then Mevato Rishus. He can be Mevato Rishus. In other words, he's Mechal Shomrei Shabbos. However, Yisrael, she'ein mishamer Shabbat Bashuk, if he's a Mechal Shabbos b'farhes, yeah, then ein mivata rishus. Bittul rishus doesn't work by such a person, you'd have to be socher rishus from him like a guy. Nimnei she'amru, Yisrael no same rishus and mivata rishus, but of oved kochavim ad she'yiskor. By a non-Jew, you have to be socher from him. It applies to a ger toshav. It applies to a Mechal Shabbos b'farhes. Ketzad, omer lo, rishusi kanuyalach, rishusi mevuteles lach kana ve'ein tzarech lizkos. So that's talking about how Yisrael can be mevato rishus or machne rishus, either one. He doesn't. You don't actually even need a kinyan. Dibur is sufficient. Okay, so that's what. Yes. You don't have to make a kinyan. In other words, you don't have to be. He can just say Rishusi Kriyalach, which doesn't work on its own, right? You require a kinyan because you don't require actual kinyan here, like a kinyan of Schiris, you only require Bittul Rishus. So he's saying Kriyalach is like saying, I'm a Vatal, my Rishus to you.
Like
same language, yes. Yes. Yes.
So is that term universally used to refer to making a kinyan?
Yeah, it's a very common usage, yes. Yes, I was giving shiur on Friday to Smicha students, and I commented something you probably heard me say in one context or another, that Chazal don't have a notion of rights. They have a notion of obligations, which generate things that look and often behave like rights, but there's no word in Rabbinic Hebrew, in Biblical Rabbinic Hebrew, for a right. There is a word in modern Hebrew, zechus, which exists, but that's not its meaning in Biblical or Rabbinic Hebrew. It means they're either a merit, or the term to be zocha doesn't mean to have the right, but it means actually to be kona something, to acquire something. So that's that. Yes.
Question here.
Sure.
So since we're talking about Erevim, does Erev Tav Shilin? Well, because the language in Erev Tav Shilin says Bechal Yerozos and so forth. Is that the same concept?
So probably what Erev Tav Shilin, the term Erev Chatzeros means that you're mixing together the Chatzeros to create one Rishos. Erev Tav Shilin, my guess would be the origin of that term. Is that you are mixing together Shabbos and Yom Tov, right? The problem is preparing on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Right. So there's one sheet in the Gemara, actually. There's a big machlokas as to why, how Erev Tav Shilin works. Because there's a machlokas Hamoraim, Rav Huna and Chista, I think. It's found in Pesachim in the third parak, and it's found in Beitzah probably in the second parak. Whether or not midoraisa you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos if Yom Tov is Friday. One sheet that says that yes, that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. And the requirement of an Eruv of Tav Shilin then is only as a formality to remind you that you're not allowed to cook from Yom Tov to Chol. But that basically means that Shabbos and Yom Tov, at least maybe one way, not the only way of understanding, are sort of one Kedusha. It's a long day in effect. And the other sheet that holds no, that we the basis on which we make an Eruv Tav Shilin, it really means that Torah is us to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. And according to that Deya, you actually have to cook on Friday, finish the food early enough that you could eat it on Friday, based upon the principle Hoil. Hoil that you could, if Orchim came, you could eat it then. You don't get Malkus, it's not Issa Deraisa to cook on Yom Tov, even for Chol, as long as you do it enough in advance where you could theoretically eat the food. So that, according to that Shita, you're not allowed to cook food with an Erev Tav Shilin unless the food is ready before Shabbos. So that's not really an Erev. That's just a Takana the Rabban to get around something. And I assume Erev Tchumen is the same thing. And Erev Tchumen means basically you have my Tchum normally goes up to here. This is not part of my Tchum. And by putting my Erev here, I'm blending together two different things. That would be my guess of the etymology, the use of the term Erev.
But the concept is the same, which is that so let's say I forget to make an Erev Tav Shilin.
Right.
So I'm covered, in theory, right? Isn't that the idea?
Because yeah.
I'm looking for somebody else, or the Rav made it, or whatever, so that Erev, he's Zocher Shelo B'Fanav. Isn't that how it works?
I don't think it's the notion of Kenyan at all. I think the point of Erev Tav Shilin is really just a Zikaron. Which might explain, by the way, where the Gemara and Beitza, the second parak, tells the story. You know, there was a suma, forgot to make earth. He's very sad. I forget which Amara said, sorry is very sad. And then, I forgot to make earth shield. And so the person said, I had everybody in mind. So then the next Yom Tov forgot again. And this time he said, I see you're a poshea. So what's Pshan? He's a poshea. I think the answer probably is because the whole purpose of the earth shield is to serve as a zikaron. So if you get once, we let you get away with it. When you're a poshea, then you're not really, you're supposed to do it yourself. So you remember, you may cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, not Yom Tov.
Some rabbi didn't show the noun, so they made a neighbor for them.
Right, but I think that story is quoted as halacha. I think, I'm not sure. I think so. Okay, I always thought you're only allowed to rely upon that eruv once. So okay, so that's the end of this gemara. Now there's a very very important issue that comes up. It's a big machlokas harishonim. It's a machlokas in psak as to this ger toshav and. Yeah, and the ayin. So what the Gemara said is the ger toshav, that yeno is kishamno. That was the way they reread the brisa. That his yayin is aser b'shesia, mutar b'hana, except for Rabbi Shimon, who takes one opinion or the other. We don't pass like Rabbi Shimon. So the question is, why is it that we are miyached etzlo yayin, but we're not mafkid etzlo yayin? In a short term, you can leave it. So Rashi, as we have it, says the following. If you take a look at Rashi, Avo miyachden etzlo yayin. It's fairly high up. If you go in the Hagos Habach on the left side by the Os Dalet. Avo miyachden etzlo yayin. Yisrael meniach bachanuso ad sheyelech kedei mil o yoser. I can go take a, you know, put it in his chanus for him to keep for me. And I can go on a, you know, spend a couple of hours away. Masha ein kein ba'ovdei kochavim. Which I can't do by a guy. By a guy, we're afraid that if he knows that I'm going to be gone for a bit, he'll open it, be menasech, you know, stick his hand in there and seal it back up. Why? Kevin de lo polach. Since the guy doesn't worship lo nagav lo menasech, he has no interest. He's not over the bazaar. He has no interest in me menasech this wine. Ulamaga oved kochavim da'ase me alma bebeso, and let's say another guy who comes into his house who might be an over the zara, we're not worried about that guy touching it. Lo chayshin dechemin dein lo hana b'kach. The ger toshav gets no hana by letting another guy be menasech. Right? If he were an over the zara, forget himself. It's a net plus for his religious feelings. But here the ger toshav doesn't believe in this, so why would he allow another guy who's an over the zara to do it? Einam ani choliga. So he's not going to let someone else touch it. The only concern would be is that maybe he'll switch the wine. He'll take that wine and then replace the wine later. So bisman muat lekalamechash. We're not worried about the ger toshav being machlef. He decides, I need some wine. This is convenient. I'll just replace it later. Yeah.
That's hard. It doesn't explain at all. Short term, versus long term. It's the psychology of would given no value to being outside the wine. Why can't you store it in the longer term?
Oh, so you can. It's not because so Rashi is making it clear here. The reason why in that last line he says lachlufei bisman muat lekalamechash. For a short period of time, it's mutter. Long period of time, we're not afraid that he's going to let an over there touch it. We're afraid that he's going to need wine. He says, "Hey, you know, let me use this wine and I'll replace it." That's where lachlufei is the concern. And if he replaces it, we never know what wine he actually gets and puts in there. That was what Rashi wrote actually originally. Later. Rashi earlier wrote, Tosus quotes it, Perish, just the opening of the big Tosus, the opening line. Perish Rashi, the reason why you're not allowed to keep it long term is Lefisha Eno Makbir Al Maga Oved Kochavim. So the guy is not the ger toshav is not makbid about not letting another guy touch it. And it doesn't work out so well, the problems with it, because then there's no distinction between short and long term. And so that's why he says Rashi eventually backed out. I'm not interested in sort of delving into the details here, but what Tosus engages in a lengthy discussion really to arrive at the issue of one point, which is, what is the status of a maga ger toshav? It's clear from the Gemara that the yayin of a ger toshav is aser to drink. And that would make sense, because the concern is chasnos. Right? In other words, the iser by a guy over to the zara is a twofold iser. Number one, he might be menasech, and he might libate the wine. Number two, is an intermarriage issue. The reason for the iser hana by stam yayinam, in the Gemara held that stam yayinam, not just yayin esech, stam yayinam is aser b'hana, the reason why they prohibited stam yayinam b'hana is because of the concern that the guy might have been menasech, even though it's not likely he might have been. The reason they prohibited drinking it was originally stimulated by the concern of chasness, of intermarriage, right? If you can't drink the guy's wine, even if you're allowed to get hana, then you're not going to dine with him. So by a ger toshav, we understand why you're not allowed to drink his wine. But what if a ger toshav touches a Jew's wine? what's the din there? So here Tosas basically says that this is a machlokas. It's not clear from the Gemara. The Gemara only spoke about, really, in clear terms, about the Yayin Shel Yisrael, that another goy, the way Rashi explains, that another goy might touch. Or Lachlufe, where the Ger Tosha puts his own wine in lieu of the Jew's wine. But what about the Ger Tosha himself touching the Jew's wine? Obviously, it's not for Hodah Zarah purposes, just because he touched it. So this is a big Machlokas HaRishonim. In Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef quotes both Deos, the Mechaber quotes L'chumra, the Ramah then quotes, after discussing, quotes a Yesh Omrim that says that the Maga of a Ger Toshav is actually Mutter. The reason why this is so important is because if you're dealing with, go back to the issue of Muslims, and let's say you're in a restaurant and you have a Jewish-owned restaurant and Jewish wine, is there a problem with a Muslim waiter pouring the wine? Right? The concern is only would be one of Maga, in a sense, or Shichshuch. And if, in fact, there's no Issur of Maga by a Ger Toshav, by somebody by our wine, then it shouldn't be a problem. Whereas if they were gozer on Maga Ger Toshav as well, so then it would be an issue. So the Ramah has two deos there. I don't know actually the Maisa, you know, what is held by. I don't know what they do. Imagine I'd be surprised if they're making Eretz Yisrael, but that would be the place where this would most likely come up. I mean, you could have a Muslim waiter here, but it'd be an interesting case where you'd have Jews discriminating against non-Muslims in hiring their help. So hiring their waiters. Okay, so that's one issue that comes up as an aside. And then I want to now go back. So that's where the Gemara leaves this. The bottom line is, it would appear that a Ger Toshav cannot be Mevatel Avodah Zarah Shel Yisrael. That would then mean, cannot be Mevatel the Avodah Zarah Shel Nachri. That would, if that in fact is the case, then apparently Itai Agiti was not a Ger Toshav, but David was happy to accept him into his army. Anyway. Okay. I wanted to, before going on in the Gemara, I wanted to just go back to one issue that, as we were going through, we skipped over, because it touches upon a very important issue, Halacha L'maaseh, which I'm pretty sure I've given shir on at one point or another here, which is about the question of Chadash B'chutz La'aretz. The Torah says in Parshas Emor, V'lechem v'kali v'charmel lo sochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad haviyachem es korban aloichem. You're not allowed to eat from the new grain in any of its forms, the grain being defined as the chameshes minei dagan, whatever they are, let's say wheat and barley minimally. You're not allowed to eat from the crop that was planted after Pesach until the Karban Omer has been brought. Bizman hazeh, we don't bring a Karban Omer, and we assume that itzumo shel yom, at etzem hayom hazeh, the day itself, is the matir, either the beginning, either sunrise or sunset, midoraisa, certainly midorabanan, you can't eat until the day is over. In chutz laretz, you have to wait an extra day. You have to wait till yom tov sheni, it's the second day of Pesach, so you have to wait. Wherever you live, assuming you're keeping Yom Tov Sheni properly, you have to wait until the end of the first day of Chol HaMoed, which would have been the day they would have brought the Omer. Now the question is, what is the din of Chadash in Chutz La'aretz? So one would be tempted to say that the general rule is that any mitzvah which is Tluya Ba'aretz, according to the Mishnah Gittin, an agricultural mitzvah, only applies in Eretz Yisrael, except that there are three exceptions to the rule. The Mishnah Kiddushin mentions three, Orla, Kilayim, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, the way the Gemara reads in its Maskana, Chadash. So the question, so there it's a machlokes, whether or not Chadash applies in Chutz La'aretz. The assumption of the Gemara, there are different deas, but we paskin that Orla in Chutz La'aretz, Orla means the fruits of a tree in its first 3 years from the time it was planted. Orla is Aser mid Oraisa, it's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, that the Isser applies in Chutz La'aretz. You can't eat it, you can't get Hana from it. And the only tremendous leniency that we have is that unless you know with certainty it's Orla, you're allowed to eat it. Unless you see somebody plucking it off the tree, you're allowed to eat it. That's part of the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, that only Vadai Orla and not Safek Orla. So practically speaking, you don't have to worry going into a store buying fruits. Maybe they, firstly, not too many fruits anyway grow that are worthy of commercial enterprise in the first three, at least when you plant from seed. Not too many fruits grow that are big enough. But either way, you don't have to be worried in Chutz La'aretz that you're buying something that might be Orla, because it has to be Vaday Orla.
So if you plant a baby tree, yeah, you don't know whether it grew from seed, you don't have any Orla issues?
Well, I would say the following. The answer, in principle, I think yes. Part of the question you have to ask, I remember when we planted our apple tree, not that we've gotten more than a few apples, the squirrels have gotten most of them, but when we planted our tree, I remember I planted it from a tree. If there's enough dirt, the question really is when the tree becomes detached from the ground, the Orla clock restarts. But if the tree has enough dirt in the clump, you know, with the roots, that it could survive that way, it's not clear how long, then the Orla clock doesn't restart. So if you take a tree, a small tree, but it's got a nice clump of dirt with it, and you move it, you buy it that way, so then it's a Suffolk when it was planted, and it wouldn't be a problem. If you actually, if it's really stripped down where there's not enough dirt that
it could never survive.
Well, look, if you temporarily knocked the dirt off and then replanted it. Anyway, it's not what you normally do. There are tshuvas about this in terms of Eretz Yisrael, all sorts of questions that arise. How much has to be there? If there's not enough dirt, so there are, Rav Shlomo Zalman has a long tshuva about this. So that would be the issue. But in most cases, in chutzpah, you're not going to have to worry. It's going to be a suffix.
This is so nice. So if you go to a nursery and you buy a baby apple tree in a big container with a root ball, let's say a 20-gallon root ball.
Yeah.
Do you have to ask, when did this grow from seed, or are you allowed to willfully remain ignorant and assume that it's been there for at least...
You can willfully remain ignorant. The Gemara talks about, I think the Mishnah may even say, that if the Nachri goes into his kerem, which is the kerem Sh'orla, and you don't see him plucking the grapes, he comes and gives you a basket of grapes, you can eat the grapes. And extremely makil in terms of, this is not regular suffix and vade. Normally, 51% isser is isser, 51% heter is heter. Here, in order to be orla, it has to be, how we define 100%, as much as we can reasonably expect as 100%. That's orla. That's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. Then, kilaya kerem, kilayim, when it's the vineyard variety, is aser mid-rabban on the chutz laretz, because kilaya kerem is aser v'hanoa min-ator in Eretz Yisrael, they would go there to be aser in chutz laretz. And chadash, if you hold that applies in chutz laretz, is an issa daraisa. There's no difference between chadash in Eretz Yisrael and chadash in chutz laretz. The issue with chadash is that the Torah, on the one hand, is an agricultural mitzvah. On the other hand, the Torah says, chukas olam l'dor sechem, b'chol moshvo sechem. So it's the parsha starts out with, kisavo el aretz, when you enter the land, but it concludes, v'lachem v'kali v'charmel, b'chol moshvo sechem. So that's the question. There is a, yes? Yeah, but why is that related to this? No, yeah, the answer is yes, and it's a very bad idea.
You can't bring an omer. You
can still be makdish or behema.
You said, how is it related? So in other words, you're saying chadash and yashan still apply.
Yes.
And you can't bring the omer.
Correct. And the day is the mat here.
Just like, that's the Uzay Parchai is by now.
Oh.
Makdish behema for the Bnei Mikdash, even though it's impossible to bring it as a
part. Fine, yes. Yes, correct.
So it's a bad idea because... just a limbo, nothing you can do.
Yeah, because somebody's going to violate Me'ilah with it. Somebody shechs it, the Chayiv Kareis for shechting it. So, yeah.
It's like worse now than before.
Oh, yeah, bad idea. Bad idea.
Guys, remember, this is an awful myself for today. Don't be Makdish or
Behemoth. Right. Particularly a kosher animal. Either one is a bad idea. I mean, Makdish, anything is a bad idea. Me'ilah is still there. But if you Makdish or Behemoth and someone shechs it, they're Chayiv Chattas, Chayiv Kareis, it's Dup Amazin, it's Shchut Echotz. So, yeah, so do not. Do not do this at home. So then the question becomes, how do you paskin with chadash? That's the one that really matters. We're not farmers, most of us. Very few from Jews are engaged in farming in this country. I'm sure there are a few. I'm sure probably in the upstate New York you probably can find a few people. I mean, some of us have vegetable gardens, I understand, but there's no arla by vegetables. What?
He had a farm.
Okay, so I said rare, not never. Kilaya kerem is that you don't expect to typically encounter. But chadash is a real issue because you don't have to be a farmer for chadash to be an issue. Right? You go into the supermarket now. If you go into the supermarket and you buy a loaf of Freihofer's bread, in all probability, a majority of the grain in that bread already at this point, if not by now, within a few weeks, a majority of the grain is going to be from the spring wheat crop that grew in 2018, most of which, the overwhelming majority, which was planted after Pesach. So there is a Stam Mishnah in Orla, which says that chadash applies in chutz la'aretz min ha-Torah. Now there's the Stam Mishnah there holds like Rabbi Eliezer. It's clear from the sugya in Menachos that the Daf Yomi did probably in the last couple of months that the Amoraim in Bavel held of the Isser of Chadash. Some held it was Doraisa, and in Bavel some held it was the Rabbanan, but they all held of it. And that determined when you were first allowed to start eating it. Did you have to be Machmir, Yom Tov Sheni, etc. But they all held of it, and therefore almost all Rishonim, most major Rishonim, Paskin and Chadash is Asr in Chutz La'aretz, even Min HaTorah, it's the Psak of the Mechaber, the Ramah accepts the Psak as well, with a caveat. The problem, of course, is that Jews in Ashkenaz were not being particularly makbid. And the question was why. So the Ramah says something very hard to decipher. It's based upon a Rush, actually. It's not the Ramah, who said that we are rely upon a sveka when we consume. I think it was barley, actually, was the issue, not wheat. In the United States, wheat is a big issue because we have two wheat crops. The winter wheat crop is never a problem. It's planted in the fall. It's harvested probably early spring. By the time it makes it to market, Pesach has passed. It's not a problem. But this country, unlike Europe and Eretz Yisrael, has a spring wheat crop, most of which is planted after Pesach, and that reaches the market by the end of the summer, and that's when you start to get issues. So the Ramah just says, and he's talking about barley there, he says that we rely upon a sveik sveika. It's a very strange sveik sveika. He says the following. It's the Rush. It's not really, Ramah's just quoting the Rush. He says that it's a suffix whether it was from last year's crop or this year's crop. And even if it was from this year's crop, maybe it took root before the Omer. Some of it's planted before the Omer. It's a very bizarre sveik sveika because it's only one suffix. The only question you have to ask is, was it planted before this year's Pesach or after this year's Pesach? You don't say, I can make it a sveika. Maybe it was from planted before the Omer, before the Pesach 2 years ago. Even if it was after 2 years ago, maybe before last year's Pesach, even before last... It seems to be a rove more than a sveika. A majority of the crop was actually, not from this year's newest crop. So that was what the Ramah says. But that's nice, but that doesn't help you in the United States of America. We know when the grain is reaching the crops. I know personally because I once called a company that makes the bread, and I asked them to find out, because the guy who puts out the guide to Chadash and Mansi doesn't have this information. I actually called them, and they called me back. I think it's like one bread company that makes almost all these breads that you buy, like Arnold's and Fryhoffer's and so on. And so I called them, and someone actually called me back, and then I told them what the information I wanted, and then they said they'll get back to me, and they did. I think by December it's already a majority blended from the new grain crop. Apparently, they don't like to abruptly change because you can get a change, change in the taste or whatever else. So they starting in September or beginning of October, they start to blend last year's and this year's. Until by the end of December, it's almost all the new crop. So the Ramah's kula doesn't apply, but the Achronim, who will defend Minhag Yisrael even by something which should be an issue d'oraisa. So they quote two different explanations to defend why it's permissible. One is the Bach, and that's why I'm talking about this now. The Bach says that in Chutz La'aretz, Chadash doesn't apply to a non-Jew's grain. It only applies to grain grown by a Jew, which would have meant in Europe for the most part, and in the United States also. Clearly, there might be some Jews who own farms where they grow wheat, but probably not too many. Certainly, it is a distinct minority, so you can rely upon a rove. That was the Bas explanation. As you'll see in a moment why, most of the Acharonim reject that. And the only other possibility, which is quoted by the Taz, is that there are a number of Rishonim, starting with one of the major Balei HaTosos, Rabbeinu Baruch Bal Sefer HaTruma, who paskin like the Chachamim in the Mishnah and Kiddushin. Chadash doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. We don't paskin like them. We paskin it's only in Eretz Yisrael. And there are a few other minor only in the sense that we don't only encounter them. They might have been big Talmid Chachamim, but a few minor Ashkenazi Rishonim who also paskin like the Sefer HaTruma, and therefore... That's what Ashkenazim rely upon. Svardim, by the way, I don't know that too many Svardim are Makbid. They don't know, but they're supposed to be Makbid. But Ashkenazim, the majority of the Ashkenazi community, most of the modern Orthodox community, and the Hasidic community also not Makbid, are only parts of the Yeshivish community. It's grown a lot in the last 15, 20 years. So Minhag Ashkenaz is to rely upon one of these Shitos, either the Bach or the Taz, and we're not Makbid on Chadash in Chutz La'aretz. Now, I mentioned the sheet of the Bach, who says that it doesn't apply to a non-Jew's grain. So Tosos here says the following. Tosos, go turn back to Samach Gimel Amid Beis. And we dealt with in the Gemara the prohibition of being Oder, of hoeing with a non-Jew, the Kilayim, which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to help the Kilayim grow, and that's in Eretz Yisrael. So Tosos writes the following. Harav Rabbeinu Tam, second Tosos from the bottom. Harav Rabbeinu Tam dochak lahavi rayos de kilayim ve'orla noagim b'shel ov ve'kochavim. Rabbeinu Tam strived and labored to prove that orla and kilayim apply equally by non-Jews, Jewish produce. V'chulon d'chuyos hein. Most and all of them you could be docha. You don't have a good raya. Ach, hevi raya me'ahi dela'el, the asru gvinos ha'ov de kochavim, mipnei shemamid misraf orla. He did succeed in bringing one raya to orla, that we learned a few years ago already, that one of the reasons given by the Amoraim, not the one we paskin like, but the reason why you're not allowed to eat non-kosher cheese, meaning gvinas akum, is because they use, as the rennet, sraf shel orla. They use the sap of orla fruits, as you can imagine, very acidic, and the acid serves as a catalyst. So they use sraf shel orla. So it means that the orla of a guy is in fact asur bahana, because otherwise, why would we have to, if it's mutter, then why would we have to make a gzera on the cheese? And Tosus says that docha kulomar sheme orla she Yisrael heim lochim. It's very, very, very doubtful to say that, yo, the guy uses sraf shel orla, but he buys the sraf shel orla from a Jew. Seems highly unlikely, A and B. You presume a Jew wouldn't sell it because it's asur bahana. Then he says, "Achein raya gadola hevi rabbeinu tamei yushalmi the sof orla the sof firstly be the first parak of kiddushin the tran he mitzvah satluyas baaretz a noagos ela baaretz chutz mea orla vekilayim Rabbi Eliezer Omer ahachadash." That's the mission in kiddushin. Rabbi Yona boy, this is the Yushalmi. Rabbi Yona asks, "V'lama lo tanina af hachala?" Chala applies in chutz laaretz. Amar le Rabbi Yose, lo teninan masnisan el advarim shenoagim bi Yisrael uva ovde kochavim. The Brisa, the Mishnah that lists things that are agricultural mitzvahs that apply in Chutz Laaretz, only if it applies to all Jews and non-Jews stuff of produce. However, chala uva ovde kochavim ena noheges chala bi Yisrael noheges uva ovde kochavim ena noheges. The mitzvah chala doesn't apply to a non-Jew's dough. Perush. The meaning of the Yushalmi is Hamaksha Srivale, the Chala Bizman Hazed the Oraisa, Ki Rabbanan the Pli Yaled Rav Huna Brave the Yeshua Beparaksheni the Ksubos. So the Rabbanan, the assumption of the Yushalmi is that the Rabbanan hold, is that the Mishnah holds, that like the Rabbanan from another Sugya who say that Chala in Chutz La'aretz is the Oraisa. And therefore they ask the question, why doesn't the Mishnah list Chala? And the answer is because challah doesn't apply by a goy's dough. Shaminan miha the orla v'kilaya kerem v'chadash noagim mishal ovde kolchavim v'afilu b'chutz la'aretz shenoag b'chadash k'dekaymen lanami b'menachos. Right. So Tosa says chadash applies in chutz la'aretz. You can see from the sugya menachos all the amoraim held that applies midaraisa or midarabanan. So you see that it applies also by a non-Jew's grain. And this is the Tosos that they all cite attacking the Bach. Tosus here and says it, and he says this in Kiddushin as well, that the, if Chadash applies in Chutz Laaretz, it applies both to a Jew's grain and to a non-Jew's grain as well. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so I will make one observation about, as on a personal note, about Chadash, which is that, and Larry, you have to close your ears, that personally, I makbid on Chadash, except that I'm on a guest in somebody's home, so I don't ask any questions, and I don't ask people to accommodate that. And the reason, my cheshbon is the following. Firstly, it was a tanai that my wife made me agree to in the first place, number one. And number two, because the minhag of Ashkenaz is not to be machmir. For the issue of Chadash and Chutz Laaretz. So it's one thing to be personally machmir, but if you won't eat with people's houses because of that, so it's a little bit being parish menatzibur. It's not like if people eat chazir and you won't eat it, so then you have to not eat it. But if you're talking about something that there's a very, very hoary tradition of in Ashkenaz of eating it, to refuse to eat in somebody's house for that reason, so that's parish menatzibur. So if you eat chadash and chutz la'aretz, a be'isr, you get malchus. But if you're parish menatzibur, you lose your chelik in olam haba. So anyway, but if you ever encounter people who do this, you should realize it's not a crazy chumrah. There are a lot of crazy chumras that people have adopted. You know, they find some mishnah brus, machmer, some ad shita, but the issue of chadash and chutz la'aretz, it's the minhag Ashkenaz, but it's a tremendous kula, because almost all the Rishonim you've ever encountered assume that Chadash and Chutz Laaretz is Asur ben HaTorah, and it's the Psak and the Mechaber, and it's even the Psak of the Ramah. Just he says that in Ashkenaz they weren't actually eating Chadash. Marshall.
But this sounds to me like, from your explication of it, that it is an indefensible minhag Yisrael.
Chas v'shalom. It's defensible. I just provided the defense.
Cool. Okay. It is essentially indefensible.
It's hard to defend.
There's one day on the Gemara that everybody comes on, and not a single Rishon anyone's ever heard of except. In other words, where else in Halacha is there something that is so universally legally unsupportable that we allow Minhag Yisrael to simply override? Because I'm not sure why it is different from Chazir the way you've described it.
So the difference is nobody says Chazir is Mutter, but Great Gedola Yisrael did Paskin. What's that? But great Gedol Yisrael were somech upon this. So the answer is, this is probably the best example I can think of to show you the power of minag okef halacha. It probably is the best example. I mean, he wants something, but it's a much lesser nature. The fact that they were so mekel and ashkaz, and we also are on stam yenam. The stakes are obviously much lower. It's an Issa Rabban and Issa Raisa, but we've learned enough Gemaras. There's no difference between stam yenam. What's that?
It has looked for coolers that people didn't, you know, throughout this
Messiah. Correct. Well, right, because this we have seen over and over. Avodah Zarah would be ground central for, you know, ground zero if you're looking for examples of seeing how much Minag Yisrael, you know, overrode what should have been, you know, Gzeiros D'Rabbanan. Chadash happens to be one of the most perhaps extreme examples because you're dealing with here, which would, according to most Rishonim, would be an Issa D'Raisa. That's correct. It is a tremendous, tremendous kula, but it also, you know, took root as the Mendo and many Gedol Yisrael who were just not makbid on it. So as I say, it's not, if someone, there are a lot of Chumash people, you know, say that they do this, they don't do that, which you would say is, you know, it's crazy, you know, it's the Chumra of the Month Club. This happens not. If someone said to you, I'm makbid on this, there is substantial basis for why they would actually choose to do so. So I had one other note. My other concern about having, I would be very, very, very concerned about Chadash being adopted as a standard, because if you live in Teaneck, or even probably in Manhattan, but I'm in Teaneck, so the bakery, Butterflake Bakery now, and when we had once upon a time three bakeries, they were all Yashan. They were all Yashan. Butterflake sometimes, by the end of the season, they may have a problem, but they're all Yashan. But I'm afraid that if you go outside of the New York area, it will impose a tremendous, tremendous difficulty on many Jewish communities, because all of a sudden, baked goods are going to be very, you know, they're all going to become an issue of Chadash. At least, you know, there's something going around now about some bread company that has a lot of the bread brands that all of a sudden doesn't want to have the hashgacha, and they're trying to get people to, I don't know what exactly it is, but at least it was for a long time. You can travel across this country. You go into, you know, some deli mart in the middle of, you know, you call it Yahupitzville, Wyoming, and you'll find kosher bread that you can eat, right? But if you're makbid on Chadash, then for half the, you know, from basically the end of August, beginning of September, until Pesach comes, it becomes a problem. And I think that the cost to you know, to Jews, observant Jews, who are not living in, you know, concentrated areas, would be an enormous cost. And for that reason alone, I would be very reluctant to see this become the standard. So the OU does not makbid on it. They do give only, I believe, to commercial, like large bags of flour for the bakeries they want. They will, I think now they provide certification for Yashan, but not on a retail type thing, as far as I know.
Yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he was in this neighborhood and shared a meal, he made it clear that he only eats.
Yes, his grandfather was very, very makbid on that.
He told us that.
Yeah, Rav Aaron was very, very makbid on Yashan. That's why I think the CRC only gives hashgacha to stuff that is Yashan. I believe. Yeah, you could check with him on that, but I think that's their policy. So if someone is makbid on Yashan, CRC stuff should not be a problem. Chicago Rabbinical Council. Because that was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's kaveda. Yeah. Okay. Sure.